Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio. With us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Free Fuel Department here at Car Talk Plaza. This is a follow-up thing, right?
Yeah. Several weeks ago, you may remember, we got a call from Heidi, whose father, remember her father, had taught her to do something many years ago. Big surprise.
Right.
And she wanted to know if it made sense.
Right. Here's what it was. After refueling her car and shutting off the pump, Heidi would then raise the fuel hose over her head, squeeze the nozzle, and thereby deliver any leftover fuel that had remained in the hose that presumably she had paid for into her tank.
Yeah, and I told her she was a number 10 nut job.
Yeah, I remember that, but I think I just suggested that she do it at night. Anyway, this must have generated a lot of discussion on the website about whether this was worth the trouble or not.
Well, I think we actually have some real answers here. It turns out that Heidi's father may have been right at the time, because we heard from a bunch of people who used to do this back in the good old days, so to speak.
Well, here's a note from a listener named Keith. He says, "Your call with Heidi brought back memories. Back in the 60s, some of my hippie friends used to do exactly what Heidi does. They would take their VW microbuses, of course, from one closed gas station to the next in the middle of the night. They claimed back then that each hose was good for up to half a gallon."
Half a gallon? I think their measuring skills may have been thrown off by whatever they were smoking in those little microbuses.
Oh, that wasn't burning oil?
No.
Well, anyway, Keith continues, "I don't think it would work today because, first of all, the hoses and nozzles have since been redesigned, specifically so they won't allow any leftover gasoline or even vapors to get out into the environment. And second, you can't sneak into a gas station at night anymore. They're all open 24 hours.
There is no night. Well, if that's true, that would explain why Heidi's father taught her to do that.
You must
and
be
at
hippie.
The time, he was absolutely right. But what about now?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Piston Puss. Here's a field report from an alert listener, Fred Holland. "Hey, guys, I suspect that many high school science teachers have already submitted their findings, but here are mine." Actually, you're the only one.
Yeah.
"Pulled up to my local Shell station under the cover of night after they had closed up. Took out my Erlenmeyer flask and number 5 stopper and drained samples from 6 pumps. Went home and measured the total." You ready for this?
Yeah.
24 milliliters or 4 milliliters per hose.
Yeah, 4 milliliters per hose. How many milliliters in a gallon?
Well, let's see. A liter's about a quart, and there are 4 quarts in a gallon, so roughly about 4,000.
Right. So if you did this 1,000 times, you could get a free gallon of gas.
More or less. but you have to do it at night.
Great.
Well, if you have another burning car question that we can help you answer, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kaya calling from San Francisco.
Kaya.
K-A-Y-A.
K-A-I-A.
Oh, close.
I-A.
I-Y. I mean, you can hardly tell. From San Francisco.
San Francisco, and that's in California?
Yeah, the same one.
Yeah.
Yep, that's the one.
There must be another San Francisco in some other state of the union, like New Mexico or something, but I trust you're in California.
I am in California.
What's happening?
I have a 2001 Ford Focus, and when I accelerate, even if it's at idle and I just sort of rev the engine, it makes a sound like when I used to put a baseball card on my bicycle tire.
Yeah.
Make it like, and it's doing that.
A flapping sound.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And it seems like it kind of goes off if I keep on driving and I reach about maybe 40, but I don't know if it's just because my car is so loud, otherwise I just can't hear it anymore.
Yeah, I know. It's often the case that noises that aren't horrendous
disappear.
Get drowned out by the horrendous noises. So, But it sounds to me like you have a belt that's disintegrating. How many miles on this 01 Focus? It's 7 years old.
Like 101,000.
You probably never have done anything to it.
Actually, I did have to get the engine replaced when it was at 70,000.
The engine?
Yeah.
Oh, did you put a used engine in?
I hope they didn't. I don't. I think we need the gory details
behind the engine replacement.
Okay, it was pretty gory, actually. My car just stopped working. It wouldn't turn on, but was making this terrible knocking noise. And I was told basically that something had gotten loose and had just destroyed, had gone through the whole engine and just totally ripped it up. And they didn't know.
Yeah, poltergeist probably.
Yeah. Now, and that has nothing to do with the new noise.
No, because the engine is a different engine. So how much did you spend for the new engine?
Well, it was only about $500.
Oh, maybe they just gave you a photo of a new engine.
Yeah, you didn't get any new engine for $500. That's for sure.
New engine.
But I don't think it has anything to do with it anyway. Because the noise wasn't from the engine, but stuff next to the engine.
Yeah, like accessories. Okay. It could be a water pump or it could be a belt. And the one belt that would be the most damaging, if it were the one that I'm thinking of, is the timing belt. If the timing belt is disintegrating or the timing belt tensioner is not working and the timing belt breaks or comes off, it's curtains for the engine. It will bend the valves. So you've got to get this fixed. Because I know it's only been doing it for a few months, right? Weeks?
Yeah.
Years?
No. Not even months. I mean,
not even months. Well,
has it gotten worse?
No, I mean, it seems it's just the same noise.
Yeah, I wouldn't drive it too much until you have it checked out.
Okay.
And if you take it to your mechanic and tell him what the story is and what we said to you, he'll immediately open the hood and he'll say, okay, rev it up until you hear the noise. And he'll say, shut it off. And you'd be done.
More likely, he'll say, shut it off!
Yeah, he'll say, shut it off, quick.
Yeah, no, you're going to get it looked at. And it's unfortunate that it hasn't gotten any worse, because usually when noises get worse, that's an encouragement to go and get it checked out. But if it stays the same, most people figure, well, whatever it is, it hasn't gotten worse, so how bad could it possibly be?
How bad could it be? And the answer is, it could be very bad.
Yeah, go get it checked out, because you don't want another engine.
No.
Plus,
no,
for $500, it's a pretty good deal. Get us a couple. Anyway, good luck, Kaya.
Great. Thank you so much.
Do something about it today.
Right.
Okay.
Or
at least
within the next couple of months. See you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
No, she won't make it for months. She'd be lucky to make it for days.
She's made it this far.
Nah.
She could probably go another 100,000. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888.
See, you're making the same mistake she's making.
227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, fellas. This is Jackson calling from Logan, Utah.
I may have been to Logan, Utah, but it was a long time ago.
That's
and Utah's a big state.
It's western here, you know. What,
Logan or Utah?
Utah.
Oh, it is. I knew that, I think. What's up,
Everything's
Jackson?
West of here.
Well, the problem we're having is we got a 2001 Honda Civic, bought it about a year ago, and about 6 months ago, every time we would turn into like a dip, like a driveway or anything with a dip, the front left tire, the driver's side tire, would make some sort of clanking sound. And it wouldn't do it every single time, but it would do it maybe 50% of the time. So we took it to our mechanic, got a new suspension on the front, installed and everything, and the problem still exists. So I guess my question is, what is the problem if it's not the suspension?
And it's a clanking sound.
Yes, it's a very sharp sound.
Is it like a thwack?
Define a flack. I don't know what a
flack.
I don't know what a flack.
I'm gonna make. Can you make the noise for us?
Probably not without making a fool out of myself.
That's the whole idea.
The best way to start describe it is it sounds like metal on metal. You know,
and it's
short.
A one time goom.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's gonna dip down. It's gonna go into a depression in order for you to hear this. And
yes.
Then is it the noise? It comes when you've entered the depression or when you've begun to leave it and restore the suspension to its normal operating position.
Actually, I think it's when it's after it's been depressed and it's coming back up to a normal position.
Ah, okay. And so you said this fellow you took it to replace the suspension.
Yes.
There are a lot of suspension pieces. How much did
it cost?
We paid about $450, and so I'm guessing it was the shocks. I couldn't tell you for sure. I could look at the receipt somewhere, but I'm thinking it was the front shocks.
So the noise was there when you went in, and he heard it?
Actually, I don't know if he ever got to drive in it to hear it. We just told him what the problem was.
Ah, okay. So,
that might have been our mistake.
Yeah, and when you went back to complain that you had I assume you did.
No, we haven't talked to the mechanic since, should we?
Well, that's what our customers do. yeah, I think so. I mean,
so you didn't tell them the clank is still there?
No, not yet.
No, because he would have said, what clank? I never heard any clank.
Right.
But he must have had a reason for replacing the front struts, and that would be about the right price. If you had a broken spring, he would have noticed it because the springs must be removed to do the struts.
Okay.
So I don't think it's that. It could easily be.
It was going to be that, though.
that would have been the answer.
That would have been the answer.
Right, if you hadn't told us.
I was ready to give him that answer. But that ain't going to work anymore.
No, it ain't going to work. It could certainly be the top of the strut. You know, there's a
well, wait a minute.
There's
he
a mount.
He wouldn't have known that it wasn't going to work. If we just said to him, it sounds to me like a broken spring.
I would be done. You guys would have been done with me.
We'd be moved on to misinforming the next caller.
Exactly. Appreciate the help.
We'd be done with you, as you put it.
But it could easily be the strut mount, which is the thing that sits on the very top of the spring.
Okay.
And that mounts to it's the topmost piece of the McPherson strut mechanism.
Okay.
And mounts to the frame of the car.
Okay.
But I'm thinking, if it isn't doing it all the time, I have a funny feeling it might be something like a sway bar bushing. And those are kind of elusive, and they do make that kind of a glunk sound.
Okay.
And it's easy to misdiagnose because when you look at them, they don't look like they could ever wear out.
Okay.
By the way, if you ignore it, it will get so bad that anyone will be able to figure it out. It'll make noise even over the slightest little bumps. You'll hear a constant cacophony. It'll sound like something, a tin can.
I'm sorry, could you make that sound for me one more time?
It's every little bump you hit will make this thing seem to smash up against the metal undercarriage of the car.
Okay.
And like the bushing, which is actually a cushion, is no longer there.
Okay. And it might make the sound if you got a big, heavy guy to jump on the front bumper.
Okay.
If you could get one mechanic to lie underneath the car and a big, heavy guy to jump up and down on the bumper.
And the mechanic underneath has got to have a long, skinny head.
Because he's going to get hurt.
He's going to wind up with one afterwards if he doesn't already have one.
Yeah, but he would be able to put his finger, so to speak, right on the noise.
Alternatively, you could take it to another shop. I mean, I sense some reluctance on your part to go back to shop number one.
Shop number one has actually done us really well in the past. We've been pretty happy with
it. Oh, I think you should go back
then
there
go back,
and suggest that he may have overlooked.
Yeah, well, I'm not concerned about any foul play.
I'm not either. I think he didn't hear the noise, and I don't think you made the case strongly enough for the noise.
Right.
I think now you have to go back and say, look, the reason I really came in is for this noise, and while I may have needed the struts, you never heard the noise, but I think you have to drive it around enough to hear the noise, and then you'll have no excuse for not fixing it.
Okay.
Right? Because you don't want to give them a chance to weasel out again.
Check the strut mount and the sway bar bushing.
You got it.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Jackson.
Thanks. All right, see ya.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. This is Melissa Alves calling from Wareham, Mass.
Hi, Melissa.
No
How are
last
you?
Names, please.
Not too late. What's up, Melissa?
I have a 2000 Toyota Camry, and I'm having a bad problem with the accelerator. It's not consistent, but it is very frequent, where if I'm driving and I stop either for a light or a stop sign, and I go to accelerate again, it's like the accelerator is completely stuck, and it won't budge, and I have to literally, like, smack it down with my foot.
So you step on the gas pedal, and the car doesn't go?
The pedal won't budge.
Right, the pedal's stuck.
The pedal is stuck.
Yeah, it gets stuck, and I have to smack it with my foot.
Ah,
right, and then if you hit it real hard, the thing takes off.
Exactly.
And you do a jackrabbit start. Have you run over any pedestrians?
Not yet, but I've come close.
I was going to say, have you come close?
Yeah. The pedal is actually not stuck.
Okay.
What's stuck is the thing that the pedal connects to. And most modern cars have electronic throttles, and there's no mechanical connection between the gas pedal and the throttle. The throttle is this plate that's inside the intake manifold that moves when you step on the pedal. And when your throttle is in the closed position, it's sticking. And it's sticking in that housing that holds it because there's either crud in there or it's worn out and it's stuck in a groove that it is worn out. So that plate needs to be either cleaned and the housing that holds it needs to be cleaned. And usually that does it.
And it should be very easy for your mechanic to see it. He'll actually see what's happening.
And he'll clean it with a solvent. and then you try it. Is it worse in the morning, first thing?
Yes.
Well, you could leave it running all night.
Not a good idea.
You've tried that.
You've tried that. No, I think I would just take it and have it cleaned.
Oh, awesome. That sounds easy.
He might not even charge you anything, believe it or not.
Who is Very this guy? Good. We'll drum him out of the business. But it is dangerous to have a throttle that sticks because...
It's very dangerous.
Yeah.
So that plate just needs to be cleaned.
That plate needs to be cleaned. In the worst case scenario, if you've got a gajillion miles in this thing, you may have to replace the housing, you know, the throttle body. But I don't think so. I think you'll be able to just clean this thing up with a solvent. And it'll
go away and you won't even know you had it.
You won't even know you had it. Exactly.
Yay!
Right. Yay! Let us know.
Thank you. We will.
See you, Melissa.
All right.
Good
bye-bye.
Luck.
Bye.
All right. I have a question that I haven't asked you in many weeks. You know what it is?
Yeah. You want to know if I remember last week's puzzler.
And
I would say that there's a 75% chance that I forgot it while you were still explaining it.
And 100% chance that if you didn't forget it then, you forgot it 5 minutes later,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
All right. Oh, look. The puzzler was about a couple of your favorite topics. Pig manure and not showing up for work.
Pig manure?
I don't know. Anyway, I'll be back with the whole puzzler and the answer.
And we'll have more of your car questions, too, in just a minute. Please stay tuned.
My car feels so alive. The canyons open wide. The world seems to unfold as I fly down this road. A twist and turning path ahead of me today. Green grass on both sides. The silver thread unwinds. The axles turn and tires burn and smoke in the mirrors. 6,000, 7,000 shifting through their gears. Axles turn and tires burn and smoke in the mirrors. 6,000, 7,000 shifting through their gears.
And even though NPR's administrative assistants all lower their mini blinds to half-mast in protest whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hey, if you find yourself thinking, you know, this show gets worse every time I hear it, why not check out some classic shows from our archives, like when we used to be good?
When was that?
It's just a figure of speech, you know?
You can download any show from the Car Talk archives at cartalk.com. Just click where it says, listen to the show.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and you ready for this? The answer to last week's puzzler.
Yeah, I can hardly wait.
Your enthusiasm is overwhelming. This was sent in by a fellow named Chuck Thompson from Austin, Texas, though I had to do a little pre-broadcast obfuscation on it, of course, and here it is. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Zeke and Zach were two high school buddies who lived close to each other, and they went off together one day in search of after-school employment. Now, neither of them had a particularly reliable car, so they figured if they both got a job at the same place, they could help each other get to work, right?
Yeah.
Well, finding employment together proved harder than they had thought, until they happened upon a pig farmer who was impressed with their manure shoveling prowess.
Oh, yeah, I remember it now.
Can you start tomorrow, he asked. Yes, sirree, they said. Do you have a car? Well, in fact, each of us has a car, said Zeke, but mine is a touchy fuel pump and a probability of starting of like 80%. And Zach's start has been acting up, and the probability of his car starting is only 70%. Farmer thought for a minute and said, sorry, boys, but my pigs and I need both of you here at least 90% of the time. Things pile up, you know. I'm afraid I can't hire you. Well, with long faces, they walked away bemoaning their bad luck. I mean, who wouldn't want to spend his free time shoveling pig manure, right? But in an instant, they figured something out. They would get those dream jobs after all. What did they say to the farmer that got them hired?
And the answer is?
Well, the answer is...
We'll be here tomorrow.
We'll be here tomorrow because we're not moving in, like you suggested last week. No, here's how it works. Zeke's car starts 80% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's 8 times out of 10, which means 2 times out of 10, it doesn't start.
Yeah.
Right? The other guy, Zach's car, starts 70% of the time, which means 3 times out of 10,
yeah,
his does not start. All right? So the two cars together don't start 2 times out of 10 and 3 times out of 10, which means the probability of both cars not starting
6%
is 6 out of 100, which is 6%. Exactly right.
And they're going to be there.
They're going to be there 94% of the time. Lucky guys. So who's our winner?
The winner this week is John Burton from New Market, Tennessee. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, John is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which he can get one of our brand new green and black endangered species T-shirts.
Whoa, what do we have to do with endangered species? What's endangered around here?
Well, under the phrase endangered on the shirt is a picture of the famous Massachusetts grease monkey.
Hey, geez, looks like a cross between you and Bonzo the chimp.
Hey, don't insult the chimp. He could be listening.
He might be.
Anyway, congratulations, John.
We'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show, so don't touch that dial. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car, you can call us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is James calling from Gorham, Maine.
Gorham, Maine.
Yes, sir.
I've been there, I think.
Sandwiched between Portland and Sebago Lake. It's
yeah,
a nice college town.
Yeah, he was in the witness protection program for a short while.
We have several of those.
What's going on, James?
Well, I have to set up, and then I have three options.
Okay.
I have a 1998 Chevy Venture van. It's got 154,000 miles. We like it very much. I replaced the spark plugs and wires in this car. I had taken it to a shop. They told me $380 to do a tune-up. I said, I'll do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Discovered it was a very difficult job.
It is.
You got to turn the motor, drop the subframe, all that kind of stuff. So I learned a lot. As I put it all back together again and we started driving it, that's when the white clouds of smoke began appearing out of the back end of the car. So now I know that one or the other head gasket is toast. I have three options. One, I can pay somebody $2,000 to repair it.
Oh, bad idea.
Right. B, I can try to fix it myself.
Worse idea.
Or I donate it to Maine Public Broadcasting.
Oh, that's what the hell are they wanting for? So you have A, you spend $2,000 to do it. B, you do it yourself.
Yeah.
C, you donate it.
Yeah.
And I have D.
What, leave it in my car and make it an ornament?
No, D, you figure out what's really wrong with it.
Okay.
So you're just assuming the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Well, I've looked down in the hole, you know, in the oil fill hole, and it's filled with that nasty goop.
Right. And the reason for it is, I believe, is your intake manifold is cracked.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's not the cylinder head gaskets.
Okay.
You have antifreeze getting into your oil.
Yes, and I have antifreeze going out the butt end of the car.
But I'm willing to bet if you did a little test,
mm-hmm.
you might find out that it's not one cylinder that's responsible for this. Rather, it's more than one.
Okay.
And if it were one cylinder, I would tend to believe it's a head gasket.
All right.
But if it's two cylinders on opposite banks...
Mm-hmm.
Then, in fact, it's probably the manifold or the manifold gasket.
Okay. I will give you one more bit of information.
Uh-huh. Okay.
When I had taken it over to the repair shop to get the information about what's wrong with it the first time, which led to the tune-up,
mm-hmm.
they told me cylinder number 2 wasn't firing.
Okay.
So when I took the spark plug out, it was like tinfoil. You know, it had been worn down to nothing. I bet in 150,000 miles, the spark plugs had never been changed in this car.
Right, right.
So my immediate assumption after the symptoms that feel like head gasket, it was that cylinder number 2 is the failure one. But I may be completely wrong about that. I haven't done a compression test yet. I have a little kit to do that.
Well, you might learn more. So here's a good question.
I don't know
if it's a good question, but it'll be interesting. Anyway, after you replace the plugs and wires,
yes.
how long did it run well?
About 2 weeks.
Those must have been a gleeful 2 weeks.
I was giddy. Absolutely giddy.
Yeah, so what are you complaining about? Well, replace them again.
Right, if that works.
Yeah, every couple of weeks.
Well, I would certainly, to satisfy your curiosity here, I would take out number 2 spark plug.
Yeah.
Okay, and I wouldn't even bother to do a compression test. I would leave it out, disconnect the ignition so the thing doesn't fire up.
Yeah.
Okay, and with that spark plug out, crank the engine over.
Mm-hmm.
See if antifreeze comes pouring out of that cylinder.
See, I think it has, because there was one time when I tried to start it, and it felt like I had one cylinder full of water.
Well, I'm guessing you have two cylinders full of water.
Okay.
And I'm guessing they're on opposite banks.
Okay.
And if you have two, it's unlikely you've blown two head gaskets. If you've got two, chances are 99.9 out of 100 that it's not the two head gaskets, that, in fact, it's the manifold.
Excellent.
Or a manifold gasket or some such thing, but probably the manifold. But that you'll determine after you get it off.
Well,
good
we will give
luck.
That a shot.
Oh,
I
can't wait to hear from you, James.
There is hope. There is hope.
See you later.
Thanks very much.
Right, bye-bye.
Hey, do you know what time it is?
Time to start using the pneumatic vise to press the grapes.
No, it's time to play Stump the Chumps. This is the part of the show where we dig up a caller from a previous show to see if our answer was correct.
Hey, anything can happen, right? So who's our lucky contestant this week?
This week it's going to be Melanie from Canaan, Connecticut.
Refresh my memory, will you?
All right. Melanie called us back in the spring because she had two problems. One was with her Volvo 850 wagon, and the other was with her husband, who had absolutely no interest in helping her.
I am having a constant battle with... there's no power steering. I mean, it used to have power steering, and now it's like it likes to go straight, and then I have to beg it and force it. It's like fighting with a freaking teenager or something to get it like, go to the right. No, I want to go to the left. No, I'm going straight. And it's a serious, I'm getting an upper body workout.
So to park the car, for example, would require, but when you're moving at high speed.
It's still hard. It'll like zoom, like go to it like in a moment after like struggling with it a little, and then it's like almost overcompensating,
right? Because it sounds like you need the pump.
Yeah. Well, you know, and finally I talked to my husband, you know, I'm like, honey, does this feel difficult to steer? Well, you know, it's just the car. And then finally I was like, I'm calling Car Talk.
Yeah.
So yesterday evening he's got the car jacked up. He's looking underneath.
Oh, so he's checking it out.
He was probably just hiding from Melanie under there.
Of course.
He didn't think she'd see his feet sticking out.
Well, he should have done the tuck. You got to tuck your feet in. So I heard we mentioned the power steering pump. Is that what we told Melanie?
We guessed either the pump or the rack and pinion, but you were leaning toward the pump, I have to say.
All right, well, let's see how badly astray we led Melanie. Melanie, are you there?
I am here, guys. So all right, nice to talk to you.
Before you fill us in, we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk. Have we, Melanie?
No, we have not.
And the answer you're about to give has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of NPR, or by the book we sent you, 30 Days to Truck Driver Biceps.
No, absolutely not.
So, was it the pump?
It was not the pump.
Oh. Was it the rack?
Nor was it the rack and pinion steering.
It wasn't that either.
Oh, brother.
Well, there's only one other thing it could have been.
What is that?
No, I'm not like,
no, it's too late now.
I guess it was the coupling between the steering column and the rack, but sounds like it couldn't be that either now.
We've stumped you guys.
You this have. You did, yeah.
Well, let me just say, I was thoroughly depressed. I love talking to you guys, but oh, my Lord, the money you were telling me I was going to have to spend on my car and not feed my children for a month.
Low on fluid, huh?
So this is what it was.
Yeah.
It was the differential steering unit, this little box. So, and guess how much it cost me?
I have no idea.
That was $250.
No kidding.
So this thing he put in, I believe, is the coupling.
Is that what a differential steering unit is?
Well, I don't know why you'd call it that. Yeah, I mean, it could be.
Well, because I wrote it down. I wanted to remember. I'm like, yeah,
Did you see the piece?
No, my husband did. It was a little box.
A little box?
What year is this Volvo?
It's a 97.
97. I have to go back to the drawing board.
I know. Well, now, though, when someone calls up, you can say...
We're going to put it in the dictionary now, the differential steering unit.
I know, and you could say, you could be really lucky. This could only cost you like $250.
All right, I'll remember that.
Oh, my Lord, guys. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for playing Stump the Chumps and enlightening us.
Yeah.
I know.
And we're baffled. We are still baffled. We're going to go buy a Volvo and take it apart.
Honey, you can have mine in a couple of years.
See you, Melanie.
All righty. Thanks so much, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Well, if you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, please email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Or you can stump us right now, obviously. Not that hard. Yeah. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Rebecca. I'm calling from Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
Hi, Rebecca. What's going on?
You have a wonderful voice.
Thank you. I use it a lot.
Well, unfortunately, my brother does, too.
Grand Rapids where? Arizona, did you say?
No, Minnesota.
Oh.
So it's a little colder there in the winter.
It is. It's actually incredibly cold. We had colder than 40 below this last winter.
And what part of that do you like? Just out of curiosity, do you like wearing 7 layers of clothes?
Well, my dad used to say that it builds character.
Yeah.
He also said that it keeps out the riffraff. I think he might be right.
Well, that's for sure.
Kept
us away.
We won't be there.
So what's cooking, Rebecca?
Well, I have a 2004 Honda Element, and it has two things going on, and they may or may not be related, and if you could fix one of them, then I'm better off than I was when I started.
Okay.
Good.
I have this high-friction rubbing sound that seems to come from my front tires.
What'd you say? High friction?
Yeah, like a rubbing sound, like something's like keeping the tires from wanting to turn smoothly. They kind of grind a little bit even.
And so you hear a grinding noise.
It is.
Okay.
And this is as you're driving along straight.
No, it's like when I'm turning into a parking position.
Ah.
It's a slow, sharp turn. And when I'm turning the wheel, the tires just do this sound.
Left or right?
Left or right. That's
And the noise sounds like it's coming from the front?
I guess I really can't tell exactly where it's coming from. It just seems to me that it's always come from the front.
Well, I know other Hondas, like the CRV, have had noises with something called the center differential, okay, which is actually located in the housing of the rear differential. Because your Element, just like the CRV, is an all-wheel drive vehicle. There's a mechanism which allows each of the four wheels to turn at a different speed, okay? And
right.
It's particularly needed when
you're doing those real sharp turns.
Exactly, real sharp turns. Because when you're doing moderate turns, while indeed the wheels turn at different speeds, the differences aren't dramatic. But imagine, if you will, that you were taking a very sharp left or right. One of the rear wheels would hardly turn at all.
Right.
And if this thing isn't functioning correctly because that fluid gets contaminated, then it could cause this scraping kind of noise.
I like that answer.
So, and the remedy is to have the fluid change, because the fluid breaks down after time.
Well, tell me this. Is this also related to this other thing that seems to be going on?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have this little... It's this intermittent hopping. I actually feel it in my...
Oh, yeah. That's exactly the same thing.
That's it.
Because what's happening is, because the wheels can't each turn at different speed...
You're right.
One of them has to hop.
I see. Okay. So that's related to the differential as well.
Yes, it is.
So you need to take it to a shop that knows enough to change this fluid.
Okay.
Okay. And, of course, the best place to take it is the Honda dealer, but they may try to sell you a lot of other stuff that you don't need.
I like my Honda dealer. They just usually try to sell me new Hondas.
but they should have known. You must have, what, 50,000 miles in this thing?
No, I have 125.
125. So they must have changed this fluid at least once.
No, they haven't. I'm terrible about getting my car serviced.
Oh,
well, it's
that's
amazing.
The problem.
It's amazing. It must be the cold weather that saved it. it may be, because the stuff does break down when it gets too hot. So
okay. You
can thank your father for sentencing you to Grand Rapids. And that has forestalled the inevitable fluid failure.
Okay, wonderful. I'll call my Honda dealership.
And that's going to solve both
problems.
Tell him you need
the rear differential fluid changed, and when that gets changed, the noise will go away, the hopping will go away. And
thanks so much, guys.
All right, they'll know what you're talking about. When you go in, they'll know.
They should have done it a long time ago.
These two differentials are in the same housing in the rear, so
okay.
they'll know what to do.
Great, I look forward to
it. And if they don't, find another Honda dealer. See you, Rebecca.
Thank you, bye.
All right, bye-bye. I think it's time for us to take a short break. But for those of you who want a copy of this show for posterity...
Posterity? Isn't that where we pull most of our answers from?
On the close. But if you miss part of the show or you want to listen again for any reason, you can always download a free podcast of this show at cartalk.com.
And coming up right after the break, we have a new puzzle, right?
We do, and this week's puzzler is from my Dining with the Magliozzi Family series.
Oh, really? Okay, so stay tuned for that and more car questions when we come back in just a minute.
I was rolling in the fast lane, I was just about on time. I ran into a jam, was it a wreck or a crime? In about an hour, I got up where I could see, thinking it must have been some awful tragedy. Hang up and drive. Please park and talk, or just hang up and drive.
And even though escaping prisoners try to tunnel back into those nice, thick-walled, radio reception-free cells whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the new Puzzler.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you ready? Pay attention.
I am going to pay attention.
Because none of these details matter, but you can you pay attention anyway.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here's the scene.
Yeah.
A family dinner with the extended Magliozzi clan. Lots of people and, of course, what? Lots of noise.
Yeah.
Somehow, above the cacophony, my usually quiet wife made herself heard. "Check this out," she shouted. "My knife and fork are stuck to each other, kind of like they're magnetized." Well,
whoa.
Sure enough, one of them, the knife, was indeed magnetized. In fact, it was such a strong magnet, she was able to pick up my entire set of keys with that knife.
Really?
Well, she dropped it in my keys into the soup, but that's another story altogether. Then one of the boys figured out that his knife was magnetized too, but the polarity was the reverse of hers.
Really?
We all kind of puzzled over this, you know, phenomenon for a while until finally somebody, well, I think maybe my niece, offered an explanation. And when we checked out her theory, we discovered that she was right.
Really? What
was her theory? Here's the hint.
Yeah, yeah.
We stuck Tommy with the check that day. Now, if you think this, that's...
huh?
Now, if you think...
I'm trying to remember when that was. It must
oh,
have been...
Oh, it's every time.
15, 20 years ago.
It's been that long since we stuck you with the check. Anyway, if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a Coleman Road Trip Pro Deluxe Portable Propane Grill with 24,000 total BTUs, two fully adjustable burners, removable porcelain-coated heat tents and grill grates, built-in tool holders, and removable grease tray, of course, and send it along with a year's supply of Neiman Ranch Bistro cuts to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a car question, our number, as always, is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Steve Dixon. I'm calling from Mansfield, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Steve, what's going on?
I drive a 1993 Pontiac Grand Prix, and I just recently put a new starting motor in it myself. It was a recycled motor. And after I installed it, every time I start the car, if I engage the ignition, the starting motor makes this insane screeching sound. And then as soon as it finishes turning the engine over, it stops.
Oh, so while you're in the process of starting the engine,
mm-hmm.
So you get this...
Exactly.
It isn't occurring when the engine is running, per se, but while you're holding the key to that crank
the
position.
The start position.
Yep. Mm-hmm. As soon as the engine is able to turn itself, then it stops.
Where'd you get the motor that you put in?
From an auto parts store, Napa Auto Parts.
Oh, so you bought a rebuilt one?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Oh, I thought you'd put a used one in.
No.
I thought you'd gotten it from another Grand Prix. In a parking lot somewhere.
Right.
I wasn't quick enough.
Yeah, you actually paid for one. Okay.
Well, when you turn the key to start your engine, there's a gear on the starter motor. You know this because you saw the starter motor when you took it out of the box.
Uh-huh.
There's a gear that meshes with a gear on the engine. That gear on the engine is called the flywheel.
Yep.
But those gears have to mesh perfectly. And if they don't mesh perfectly, you get something called gear clash, gnashing of the teeth.
The gnashing of the teeth.
Okay.
Very good.
So, in fact, you may be getting that. Were there any shims between the starter and the engine when you took it out?
That was the old motor, not that I noticed.
Yeah.
But I didn't add any whenever I put the new motor in.
Well, it may be that maybe the shims fell out when you took the old starter out. What did you do this, in the driveway?
No, I have a garage.
You have a garage. They're probably on the garage floor.
They're probably on the floor, exactly.
Well,
it's an old garage, so they could have fallen through the boards.
Oh!
Well, if you weren't paying attention, you may just need another shim, or you may have too many shims. In either case, you're not getting a good mesh between the teeth.
Oh.
Or the starter could be faulty. But as soon as you've released the key, that gear pops out. And when it pops out and is no longer engaged with the flywheel, the noise immediately goes away.
Yep.
Yeah, so you're getting this screeching while you're trying to start it. I would take it back to, I know you hate to do this, but I would go back to the place where you bought
the
starter.
Exactly what I was going to suggest, and just tell them to swap it with you.
Okay.
Well, while you're there, buy a shim kit.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure this starter has shims. I don't know precisely. You may have to experiment. You put one in and try it. If it sounds better, you put another one in. The noise gets worse. You take two out. I don't know. You might spend a weekend doing this. But this can be difficult. But you've got to get rid of that noise because eventually it's going to damage either the starter motor or the flywheel.
Oh.
So you've got to get it. And if you can't get it figured out yourself, take it someplace because the long-term consequences are severe.
Oh, great.
Great. Hear your thought. You're going to save yourself $50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how long have you been living with what's going on now?
I did it about a year ago.
Oh, you put the starter in a year ago?
Yeah.
And you're just getting around to calling us now?
You guys are busy.
Yeah, we've been busy. We couldn't take your call. We apologize.
My dad said, who cares as long as it starts the car?
Well, it would be nice to fix it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But get the shim kit just in case it does the same thing with the new starter and something will work.
Okay.
Or it'll get worse. If it gets worse, maybe the car will catch fire and you'll all be over then, Steve. see you later, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Alexandria from Greeley, Colorado.
Greeley?
Yeah.
Okay. Never heard of it.
Northern Colorado. You know, I went to school at the University of Northern Colorado.
Yeah, yeah. We've heard of it.
Okay.
Okay. The cow town.
Yeah.
You probably smelt it more than you've heard of it.
Maybe.
Oh, that's good.
So what's up, Alexandria?
Well, I have a 2005 Scion XA with about 40,000 miles on it. And I share the responsibility of this car with my boyfriend of 5 years. And it's a manual. And the way I was taught to drive a stick shift was that at 3,000 RPMs, you shift to the next gear. And he's under the impression that it's okay to wait until you get to 4,000 or 5,000 RPMs. And sometimes 5. He claims that he doesn't wait that long to shift. But I'm in the car with him when it happens. And I have to tap on the shifter and say, shift, time to shift. What he claims is that he's cleaning out the gears. But
he's cleaning them out, all right. He's going to be cleaning out your bank account pretty soon.
That's what I thought. Yeah, exactly. So 3,000.
Well, how did you arrive at the number 3? So you think 3, and he thinks 5.
Between 4 and 5, yeah.
Yeah, well, probably more like 5. He's when you're in the car, he's doing 4. If you were not in the car, he'd be doing 5,500. So he's winding it out. And by winding it out, what he's doing is he's making the engine rev very high. And he is basically delaying the shifts so that he is getting more power to the wheels, you know, by doing that. So, for example, if you wanted to get from 0 miles per hour to a given speed in the shortest possible time, you would do what he's doing.
Right. He would get there before you.
Sounds just like that.
And what it would be nice to do is let him drive his way for a week and figure out what he's getting for miles per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And then you drive your way for a week and see what you're getting in miles per gallon. And
that's
then
my
he's,
argument.
And then money will change hands. And he's going to owe you a ton of money because he's going to lose that bet.
Right, and that's what it boils down to. And not to mention the fact that it's more wear and tear on the engine, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in no way is it better to do what he's doing unless your only objective is to get to the highest speed in as little time as possible.
Yeah, and between you and us, he is a wacko.
So, conversely, let's go to the other side of it for a second here. We may want to. Is he around? Could we talk to
him?
Yeah,
he is. Would you like to talk to him?
Well, in a minute. We'll, conversely, even shifting at 3,000 RPM
is a little high.
It might not be the best scenario for maximizing your mileage. No, in fact, it's often suggested that the best way to maximize your mileage is to get into the highest gear
as fast as you can.
Exactly. So shift, you know, without lugging the engine. And you know what lugging the engine is, by having it in too high a gear for too low a vehicle speed.
Right, you can feel it.
Yeah, you'd feel it. You feel the engine struggling. You'd never want to be in fourth gear if you're doing 14 miles an hour.
Right.
But at the same time, it's okay to be in fourth gear when you're doing 25 miles an hour, even though what's your boyfriend's name?
Kellen.
Okay, even though Kellen.
How do you spell Kellen?
K-E-L-L-E-N?
I-N.
Kellen.
Yeah, he's Irish.
Is he from the old sod? If he is, then he may in Ireland they don't drive like this because gasoline's too expensive. He's living it up.
Exactly.
He came to the States and he's burning up your gas.
But in general, I mean, given what he does, is he generally a wacko driver?
What is your definition of wacko?
Does he zoom? Does he take turns on two wheels? Does he tailgate? Does he drive at 95 miles an hour when everyone else is driving at 70?
No, that's me.
That's you.
Oh. No.
Does he careen around turns?
No, that's me.
That's you.
Oh, that's you too.
Oh, you guys are a bad combination.
I mean, I drive faster, but I'm very conscious of, you know, what gear I'm in. And I'm all about, you know, maximizing my fuel efficiency. Ah. And that's what I keep telling him, is that you keep pushing these gears like this, it's killing our gas.
Well, if you really want to maximize your efficiency, then even shifting at 3,000 may be too late.
Okay.
You might want to start shifting in at 2,000 RPM.
And really?
Again,
wow.
A lot will depend on the terrain. If you're encountering hills, for example, you're not going to be able to do that. You simply won't have enough. You don't have enough engine power.
Enough power.
And there's not enough mechanical advantage from the gears.
But on a regular flat road,
you can probably shift to 2,000.
Easy.
Okay.
But does Kellen have some reason for doing what
he
does?
Yeah, he's blowing out the transmission.
He's cleaning out the gears. Well, let's put
Kellen on. We need to talk to
him. Okay, one moment. Here he is.
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez. Hello?
Hi, Kellen.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, man. I don't know what she's been telling you.
Oh, well, it ain't good. It ain't good, but she's been saying that your theory about bringing the RPMs up to 5,000 before shifting is...
Okay, that's an exaggeration. It's not 5,000.
4,000?
Around there, yeah.
Around 4,000.
Right.
And your rationale is, she says, it helps to clean out the gears or blowing out the gears.
My first car was a stick shift, and when I was learning how to drive, my aunt took me to the country, and we drove around the country roads, and she was telling me that it's kind of important to get everything you can out of each gear. And so I kind of have – that's been lodged in my brain since then. And
so this was your aunt who said this.
We all have a smart aunt, and she's mine, and so I kind of, you know.
There were two instances where her advice would be sound. Number one, if driving older cars that had carburetors, it was often not a bad idea – to rev the thing up to blow out some of the carbon. And by making the engine run at high speed and getting it hot, you would burn some of the carbon off the piston crowns. And that was a thing that lots of people did. Not necessary anymore. Carbon doesn't build up on pistons anymore.
Okay.
The other reason her advice might have been all right, if you have a very small engine, an underpowered engine, then indeed you have to drive like that. If you're trying to negotiate steep hills with a 40-horsepower Vauxhall, you know, or a Hillman, then you indeed have to drive the thing so that you rev the thing and wring every last horsepower out of that engine. And the way you do that is you
rev it up.
You bring it up and get to the revs where the horsepower is maxed out. So if the maximum horsepower output of the engine is at 4,500, that's where you want to get the thing to before you shift. But that only applies if you are, again, trying to drive the thing and get it to the maximum speed in the shortest amount of time. Or if you have a very underpowered engine and you're trying to climb steep hills. But if you think this XA is terribly underpowered, then you're driving the wrong car. And so what you're doing is actually just pouring gas down the drain.
You can try it out by actually figuring out what your miles per gallon is over a week. You can do it at 4,000 or 5,000 RPM. She can do it at 3. And then you can do it at 2 and see how much difference there is in miles per gallon.
And you'll find out it's not any different, and you'll never call again.
I mean, we're predicting that at 2,000, it's going to be considerably better than at 4,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
So give it a shot.
Yeah, but we got the sense that this is ticking her off. This is. Is there anything else you do that's annoying that we can address while we have you on the line? I mean, how are your dinner manners? You know.
I think it's just mainly the shifting.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Put her back on. We need to talk to her just to kind of close up the call, you know.
Okay, here you go.
Nice to talk to you, Kellen.
I'm back.
So Alexandria, is there anything else he does that's bothering you? Or is that
it? You don't have enough time.
Oh!
But he's been your boyfriend for 100 years, so you must like him a lot.
I do. And we're trying to take care of this car, you know.
Yeah.
So. I'm sure you and Kellen have a wonderful time together, and you will get this resolved. And he didn't sound in the least bit belligerent when we told him he was a knucklehead.
Well, he needed to hear from someone higher up.
Alexandria, good luck.
Thank you very much, you two. We enjoy your show. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David the Cavs of Belleville Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Lake Champlain, Quiche Lorraine, Pork Chow Mein, Braised Calf's Brain, Dried Wolf Bane, Diced Romaine, Whooping Crane, Multigrain, Dry Champagne, and Candy Cane Group Weight Gain is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Tommy's memory coach is you, Sherlock Familia. Our Janis Joplin biographer is Ian Bobby McGee. Our retirement party planner is Louisa Jolly Goodfellow. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our staff landscaper is Alonzo Green. Our Mexican food taster is Don Juan Dos Tacos. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is U. Louis Dewey, known to his fellow convicted loiterers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack the Tap Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
And don't forget, don't drive like my brother.
I won't. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of the show, which is number 838, along with Car Talk clothing, audio collections, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce Division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, check out the latest insult to the music community.
That's right. The Martin Guitar Company, the previously well-regarded instrument maker, has created a special click-and-clack edition of their famous D28 acoustic guitar, with all kinds of interesting Car Talk-related decorations and detail.
How did they get their board of directors to approve this?
They didn't. They're a private company, so they can make moronic decisions without board interference.
Hey, lucky for us. See photos of the new Click and Clack Martin guitar all this week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though physicists take up a collection to put us in the Hadron Particle Accelerator whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.